Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Metaphysical Hour. Today is December 9th, 2016, and I'm Julia Cannon. And let's see here. I got to get my head straight. We're having, now apparently it's a really strange day. I don't know what's going on out there in the internet world, but some strange things are going on. Servers are down everywhere, and so we're recording this show, and it'll be broadcast at a later date, and so we'll see. It'll be a surprise for us all, so this will be fun. This is very interesting. Have no idea. So this is, this is just very interesting. I guess the gremlins are at it again. That's what Mom used to always call it, so that's what we'll just say. Just lots of things going on. So we'll just get right to it. Our very special guest tonight, you've been with us for quite a while, Guy. You've got so many books with us. My goodness. Guy Needler is our special guest tonight. And bless your heart. Now, are you in England right now?
Well, right now I'm in England. I expect to be in Burma on Friday with a bit of luck. We're going on sabbatical, but it'll also be a little bit of research as well for understanding a little bit more of how us as human beings understand the greater reality and how we've sort of twisted it and warped it to our own requirements and devices over the millennia, I think is the proper way of saying it.
Well, because right now it's like 1 o'clock in the morning for you, right?
Yeah. It's not too bad. I mean, I have had shows that have started at 4 a.m, so that's a bit difficult. But this is just a late night.
Oh wow! Well, bless your heart. Well, thank you so much for doing this, because I know we were trying to schedule this so it wasn't too bad, because I think you said some other weeks you were going, because Burma is, excuse my ignorance, I haven't been there. Where is that?
Well, we have to fly to Bangkok, and then it's sort of about a couple of hours flight from Bangkok to Myanmar. So it's not too bad. I would guess it's about 17 hours flying time from the UK. So think of Bangkok and probably slightly, well, my geography is rubbish, by the way, but I think it's sort of northeast of Thailand. So it's that sort of area.
Okay. Yeah. So then the timing would have been even more different.
So. Well, it would have been probably yesterday for me.
Yeah, there you go.
Tomorrow for you.
Yeah, we'd have been calling into the past. So.
Absolutely.
Oh. Yeah, and so we think we're having internet issues going on now. We just, who knows what would have been going on then. So so I'm so glad we were able to do this in this way. So I appreciate this. Yeah, this is. So those of you out there that have not met Guy before, I mean, my goodness, you have got the list of books and you know, the progression of your books with us is just amazing. When I think about how this keeps going and where it's going, it's just amazing. But you know, when you started, I'll just let everybody know, it's kind of like, because it gives an idea of what's happening here. But the first book was The History of God, and then it was Beyond the Source, book one, and then Beyond the Source, book two. And then I think you went to The Origin Speaks, is that right? Or was it the Avoiding Karma next?
Avoiding Karma, which came from absolutely nowhere, because I was doing I was working on a new website, and I started to do a few blogs based upon how to avoid karma. And then after about the 56th or 57th blog on how to avoid karma, I suddenly got it that I was supposed to do a book on that. So took a bit of time to sink in.
Right. Yeah. So if you can see how this is going, so. Yeah. So that was real diversion from the others, because the others are all like, you know, you're talking to God, you're going beyond God, and then, you know, and then beyond beyond the god.
So, yeah.
And yeah, you just keep getting further and further out there. And you're even going further than that, from what I understand. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, I've got my little furry friend with me at the moment, and she's my lovely cat, and she's trying to play the keyboards on the computer. So it's not a good idea to have her put her back on the floor. So, Madam Puss, this is your 5 seconds of glory. The book that's currently released is called The Aeon Dialogues, which is slightly sort of backward loop. But the work I'm working on now is called The Curators, and it sort of follows the genre of information that I'm fortunate enough to be able to channel. And in this instance, it sort of, I thought it was going to stay within the physical universe, and it started off in the multiverse and multiverses and the possibility of multiverses. And it's basically about the entities that are created by our source to basically maintain the structure and the functionality of the multiverse and the various different realities and multiverses and events that we create through use of these. So that's the one I'm working on right now. And I have to say, I'm really pleased because I've got past the 50,000 word barrier. So I've patted myself on the back last week.
Oh, you've always amazed me. I know in the beginning, we've always kind of had this little you couldn't even call it a competition because there was never a comedy. it was always like, well, here's where I am. And I was just on my first book. And it was just like, well, okay, fine. I mean, you left me in your dust long, long time ago. but it was always just, you know, okay, well, here's where I am. Here's where I am. I'm like, okay, go for it. You just keep going.
Well, the problem I've got is, well, it's a nice problem to have, is I know I've got to do 12 books, and I know the subjects for each of the remaining books as well, and it follows the same. I mean, it follows the same genre and the same sort of direction. I mean, when I finish this book, the one I've got to write on the entities called the Arm, and then there's another one called Beyond the Origin, which goes into it's not actually beyond the origin, but it's beyond the current information about the origin and various different sort of things that it's done since writing the book. And then there's other things about understanding the differences between religions and how to heal, and then what the roles of antichrists are. So there's a whole bunch of different things I've got to deal with before I'm let free. And when you're working for Source or God or whichever way you want to call our creator, you're never really free. You're always a servant. So it's just when I finish these last few books, it's going to be an understanding of what's next. But I'll try and live in the moment if I can.
Yeah. So let's back up just a little bit. So for those, just give a little bit of background, just a real brief one about you and just got, because you mentioned the channeling and. So just a brief synopsis of about all this, okay? And then come into the book about Aeon Dialogues.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Well, basically, I was trained as an engineer, and I was also always interested in things metaphysical. And although I practiced meditation very hard in my teenage years, I had a visitation from four what I classify as guides or kindred spirits or similar spirits that told me what I was doing was right, what I understood was right, but it wasn't the right time. I needed to become more of the human being and understand more about humankind. And so from that point onwards, my metaphysical research is just actually pretty much disappeared. And then I did what everybody else does, you know, met my beautiful wife at the time, we got a house, I progressed in my career, sought to progress my academic progression as well, getting a couple of master's degrees along the way. And then later, when I was doing some of these master's degrees or some of the courses associated with them, I met somebody who was interested in Reiki, and I was persuaded to go and do a Reiki share. That resulted in a whole sort of healing cascade where I ended up going to a number of different courses. But one of those included seeing a lady who was a first-generation student of Barbara Brenner. And she eventually taught me all the things that Barbara Brenner taught her. So I sort of classified myself as a second-generation student. But along the same time, another friend of mine went to work in Sweden for a car company called Saab, which I don't think exists anymore. And he was told that he has to take me on a walk somewhere because something special was going to happen. Well, on that walk, I received, I felt the need to meditate in a certain area. And during that meditation, I received a really sort of life-changing download and of energy and understanding and awakening process. And the energy just was so strong that my wife, Anne, at the time, who stars in the latest book, by the way, and my friends said that they felt that I was being retuned or rewired by a number of different alien entities that were hovering over me at the time. Well, since then, everything's gone berserk, really. The healing I was working on ended up going a bit awry because I was going to different levels that I wasn't being taught to go to. And I was getting told off or severely reprimanded is probably a better way of saying it by my energy healing teacher. And although I capitulated and behaved myself and started to work within the guidelines, I tried to understand why I was going to these different levels and what they were. And this resulted in 3 or 4 years of hard work and daily meditation, trying to create a process that would allow me to go back to these different levels and increase my ability to go to these levels in a regular and robust and repeatable basis, which I eventually created. And whilst I was doing this, I managed to contact various different entities. One of those was eventually described itself as our source, what we call God, and another one was the origin, and there was various other different entities along the way as well. And as I was doing these meditations and going to these different levels, I started to journal the information. And it's the journaled information that eventually became the first book, The History of God. And basically every other book since then is a continuation of the communication with various different entities, the same level as our source or the same type as our source. And they created the origin, what the Hindus call the absolute or the all there is. So really, everything is a progression from my reawakening, which happened in 2000, can you believe? Now, that's an interesting year, isn't it, 2000?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the latest book, The Anne Dialogues, is a sort of a progression because the information is fairly sort of similar in terms of the understanding, but it goes into the incarnation process because Christmas 2012, my wife Anne, who had previously been diagnosed with a brain tumour, finally ascended the physical. Oops. And it was a case of I was starting to write and work on the Origin Speaks, and I was rather surprised to find out that towards the end that I was going to be working with Anne again. And at that point, I was really quite surprised. I expected another book, and I was working towards or sort of gearing up to another book. So to be told I was going to be working with Anne, and then Anne appear, as it were, in my sort of my perception and my communication that I normally get through channeling, it was not only a surprise but a bit of a shock as well, because you can imagine that from a physical perspective we're going through the bereavement process and stuff. So when I started to work on this, I was a bit sort of a little bit wobbly at first and a bit sort of unsure as to whether it was the right thing to do. But the information that started to come out was quite remarkable, but also it worked upon known subject headings in terms of the reincarnation process. So I thought, well, this is interesting. This is because although it deals with subject headings that we know as metaphysicists or spiritualists, the information that's coming out is much deeper than I was aware of, and also it followed the similar genre of the type of information that I get as well. So it sort of kept the feeling, so to speak, in terms of the information, but it went into a a different area that was more, shall I say, mainstream in terms of what most spiritualists and metaphysicists would like to see. And so I think that The Ann Dialogues is going to end up being quite a popular book, actually, because it does add a lot more information to the supposedly already fully known subject of reincarnation and what we do when we've moved beyond our physical vehicle and we start to plan towards the next incarnation to experience the lowest frequencies of our multiversal environment.
Well, absolutely, and that's what I'd like to talk about. You know, because that's what it does. It's almost like step by step. What happens from the point that she's even going into the whole process of the whole dying process, really.
That was a bit scary, really, because having been on the physical side of things, observing it from the physical side, mm-hmm. and then sort of getting it from the other side was a bit of a ground shaker for me, because you think to yourself, oh, good grief, could I have done something better to have helped? You know, should we have done this, for instance? I mean, one of the things that was identified fairly straight on in the book was that things like painkilling drugs or things like morphine or other drugs to sedate us, if you've got things that, you know, like extremely painful diseases such as cancer, which can be very, very painful in the later stages, specifically if we're hanging on for as long as we can do, actually slow the transition of the aspect of our trinitic self, what we call the soul in popular text. It slows down its ascension back into the energetic, and that was a real surprise to me. I mean, when I looked at other things that I've understood in the past about how taking drugs mechanically assists transcendental meditation by making the physical body abhorrent to the soul, so it has to get out, and that's where we start to get the visualizations associated with being in different frequencies associated with this particular universe and the rest of the multiverse. That's, you know, I thought it would assist the soul, but actually it doesn't. It slows it right down in terms of its ability to ascend and break away from the physical form. So that on its own was a really quite a shocking piece of information. And some of the people who I've spoken to since then, I've talked about some of it in some of my sort of world satsangs that I do, which are they're no longer live now. I do them recorded first, but I ask people to send in questions. But it's, you know, when I've talked about that on those satsangas with the group of people who I work with, they were horrified that that in trying to assist somebody, you actually don't assist them. You inhibit them. And it's a dodgy line to travel. You know, do we help them or do we don't help them? Do we slow down the pain or do we slow down the movement or the ascension of the soul from the physical form back into the energetic? You know, it's a funny line to travel, that one, and I'm not sure which one to go even now.
Yeah, and so. Yeah, exactly. That is a strange place to be. I think, well, what just came to me is to just be with them.
Yeah. And that's the most important thing is that even though we're with them, we do help in terms mm-hmm. of helping them move on, because if we can let them go, that's the most important thing. We give them lots of love mm-hmm. and say, okay, the physical was just a momentary point in our existence. And it's a fairly difficult one. It's time to go home now. And yes. rather than thinking selfishly of ourselves and wanting them to be here, we should, you know, really let them go. And that letting go energy, that does accelerate their ability to go in quite a dramatic way. And, you know, that's one of the things that I managed to do. I managed to sort of divorce my own sort of emotions from it all and say, look, you know, you need to go. And I even had a satsanga where we all got together energetically and gave an energy to go, and it really did accelerate her ability to move out of the her physical form, even though she was potentially being held back by all these pain-killing drugs and sedating drugs as well. Those, that's one of the more sort of abstract sides, although it's closer to real. Yeah.
Did you and Anne have any discussions prior? Because you had some notice, I mean, obviously, with her diagnosis. Did you have any discussions prior to, and people have asked me this as well with Mom.
I can understand.
Yeah, exactly. If you had any discussions prior to her leaving, about getting together and after her leaving and about doing something like this, you know, will you get together later and do, you know, and she'll tell you what it's like and what's going on and things like that. Did you discuss doing a book and discuss doing this?
No.
Exactly. You didn't have a plan, did you?
We didn't have a plan. What we said years before, you know, when we were sort of young and in love and all that sort of stuff, is that if ever one of us did go, we'd do our best to try and be in contact. Mm-hmm. And you know, during the last sort of couple of years when things were starting to catch up with Anne with this brain tumor, and certainly the last few weeks, that thought process never came into either of our minds. And so when she finally went and I had to clear out the room that she was in the hospice, and I came home, and this was Christmas Eve, by the way. It all happened in the first hour of Christmas Eve. And I came home and I sort of woke up 6 or 7 hours later thinking, okay, Anne, so where's this sign? <You know, laughs> where's this sign? And so I was a bit sort of, you know, a bit peeved, actually, which, you know, a bit frustrated. And then all of a sudden I heard this very strange musical tune. And it was one of these Christmas tunes you did have. Sometimes if you buy things like musical Christmas cards or musical Santa hats or musical badges, those sorts of things you can buy for various different occasions. Well, this was one of those things that it sounded Christmassy. And I thought, where's that coming from? And I knew we'd had these sort of, you know, Christmas Santa, you know, musical Santa hats for years when we have our sort of Christmas meal with the family. And I thought, but that music's not coming from there. And I had a rummage around, and I eventually found the source. And what it was basically was that a number of years ago, and knowing my like of at the time of Real Ale, had bought me a bottle opener. Now, this bottle opener was an electronic bottle opener. So when you open the lid of the bottle, it created a contact and you get a tune. And so this one was a Christmas tune. And this only works when you have a metal-to-metal contact and no other way. So when I eventually found where this noise was coming from, I found an old antique cigar box that was from my dad's grandfather. And we used to use these for storing crystals. And in the one where this device was, there was nothing else in there. There was no silver paper. There was no crystals in there. There was no other metals. It was on its own. And it had gone off and done this noise. And so I thought, well, that's the sign, isn't it? So I jumped out of bed, ran downstairs, got my digital camera, because I know that the couple charge device arrays that are used to capture images on digital cameras work on frequencies well above the human eye. So I went around taking pictures around the bedroom. And at first, it wasn't obvious that there was anything there. But it wasn't until about a day or two later when I looked, these pictures had got, you know, huge orbs everywhere, absolutely everywhere. And so, you know, when I saw that, I was really, really sort of pleased. But the other thing was that bottle opener, the beer top bottle opener, that went off another 5 times during the morning. and there's no other way you could have done it other than putting metal to it to make it work. And it was, that was bizarre, that was. And so that's how I knew this. I got my signal.
Yeah,
was there, and literally 3 or 4 months later, I went to India to do a workshop, and one of the ladies took an image there of me doing a lecture, and in that image was a huge orb, one of the biggest orbs I've ever seen, and I just looked at it and thought that's good. That's a nice orb, that is. And I thought, well, it felt like Anne was there as well. Mm-hmm. And then another friend looked at it and she said, you know, there's a face in this. Do you look at it? When we looked at it really closely, you could see an outline. And the outline was of Anne's head in profile from when she was a teenager. Because I've seen this image before on a picture in my mother-in-law's house. And it was virtually the same. And there we go. But I didn't see that, you see. It took somebody else to see, because I was a bit too close to it all.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. How cool.
So I was really pleased about it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, okay, so it was a while then before everything started coming and started happening then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, once I'd realized that I got the contact there and I started to become a little bit more detached, which is what you need to do when you're sort of channeling information, because if you don't desire something to happen, you can create resistance or a blockage purely by the desire for it to happen. So you have to be sort of in a very neutral sort of gear. And once I'd started to sort of get used to the fact that I was on my own for this particular period of my life, my incarnate existence, and the person who was supposed to help me move back to where they're supposed to be, helping me from the other side, I started to sort of become more relaxed. And then I started to get more and more information from Anne. And it became very, very clear towards the end of the Origin Speaks that there was going to be something else going on. Although I thought it was going to be a book that I'm working on now, or maybe another one, I wasn't quite sure which one it was. I knew it was going to be more to do with understanding the environment that we exist within in the energetic. I was starting to think more of Anne. And then towards the end of that book, in fact, the very last sort of pages, she sort of popped up and said, you're going to work with me. We're going to do this book. And I thought, well, what do we need to talk about the incarnation process for? That's been done. There's that many books out there on the incarnation process. I'm not going to add anything to it by doing it. But I sort of thought, well, we'll go with the flow and see what happens. And now I'm really sort of pleased because the information there is of a different level of understanding.
Oh, absolutely it is, yeah.
And so it was very worthwhile based upon that. And although it seems to be from my reader's point of view, that may seem to be a little bit of a U-turn for a bit. I feel that actually, although it's a U-turn in terms of the subject headings, the understanding is not a U-turn, it's a continuation. It's just a deepening of our understanding of what we do and why we're here. And then we can sort of then catch up again and go back into understanding a bit more of the greater reality later. So I think it's going to be a very important text at some point in the future.
So you've received feedback so far, some feedback on it already.
Yeah, I mean, there's already people commenting on Amazon for it as well. So it's really good stuff. I mean, people have written to me and said that they really enjoy it, and they felt it's a bit of a milestone in terms of the understanding the incarnation process.
Yeah, absolutely. Wondering, like what kind of, like specifically, I mean, I know there are specific points in here, like the one where the drugs, like you're talking about, because we've received calls, you know, too, like, and that was one of the points that stand out. And then another one, another topic, I'm going to see if you mention it, but I was going to see which topics are the biggies that people mention. That you
the suicide one is one.
Yep,
and that's a big one. You know, and people think that suicide is an easy way out. It's not. It's a big problem downstream. For the people who are listening to this in this particular event space, even though it's recording, it's live.
It will be.
It's recorded live, honestly. The thing with suicide is that we have, although we have a number of termination junctures where we can leave the incarnation, and it's all agreed that that we can use these things, and it doesn't cause any problems because it's like everything comes to a natural finish, and then we decide to stay or go. And if we decide to go, that's it, fine, we go. The body demises in some way. If we decide to stay, then things happen and we start to sort of gain more reasons to be here, and we start to go through a different life plan. But if we commit suicide, which is usually not another plan. In fact, it's extremely rare if it's used as an exit or a termination juncture. Then we've got all of these things downstream that are suddenly not going to happen. All of these things would be what we're going to do, how we affect the environment, how we affect those individuals around us who we would have met, talked to, interfaced with, had some form of influence on, and how they would have influenced us. And then all the things that they would have had influences on, and other people that would have come from the first interaction with us. And so there's all these like fractalized things that go off down the event stream, as I'm now told to call it, and different event streams. So it all becomes parallelized as well in various different ways. And so you get this huge, from a human perspective, three-dimensional fractalization of things that would have happened as a result of us being here that don't happen anymore. And all these things that would have happened would have caused evolutionary progression for ourselves and other entities in all the mainstream event spaces or time streams, you want to call that, and the parallel versions that are caused by our various different choices we have whilst we incarnate or working with the multiversal environments, or in this instance, the universe, the single universe. That's the lowest environment within the multiverse. And so we miss out on all that stuff. And the worst thing is that we have to repay the lost evolution that other entities would have had we been still incarnate and sticking to the plan in whichever way we can do. So that for me was a big eye opener.
Yeah, how long did it say it took? Like many times to repay that?
Oh, thousands of lives. You know, but I can't remember it in terms of human years now. But something like a million years. You know, it was to do to sort of try and sweep it up, and that was, you know, that's caused more than a few questions. I can tell you.
Right. So that shows you just how much you mean. You know, I think we don't value ourselves near, you know, that just shows you how much value we have, you know, with all this rippling. We just don't realize what we do.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, it. I mean, there's an old Buddhist saying, the wings of a butterfly cook, you know, in one country can cause a hurricane in another country.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's exactly what happens if we sort of terminate our physical incarnation early without it being part of a natural demise process through one of the termination junctures that we have, of which there's about five, I'm told. So,
oh, okay.
It's just that, you know, basically we have to stick it out, even though it's we don't think it's very nice sometimes. We always come out the other side as a stronger entity.
Well, they've always said, you know, you're never alone, is what I've always heard. You're never alone. And I know, even though it's really, really hard, there's always a solution, and you always have there's always help. And so even though it feels like, yeah, there may not be, you know, it may be over insurmountable, and it feel like it's too much, you can get through it, because you're never given more than you can take or that you can do. So, because it's something that you set up for yourself to overcome. Mm-hmm. So, or whatever, it's an experience, a lesson, or whatever. So,
yeah, absolutely. It's again, an old sort of manager of mine said, you never eat your elephant in one chunk. always eat it in bite-sized chunks. So, yeah. as a piece of sort of physical, you know, mental coaching, if anything seems too big, break it down to small parts and do the small parts, because the small parts added together equal a big part. And then And so it's nothing is insurmountable. It's just that we need to sort of break it down to achievable chunks of work. And that helps us if we mean, you know, when we've got lots of things happening around us that we feel we're out of control with. So it's try to break, if ever you feel it's too hard, just break it down to smaller chunks. And then it's
and if you realize that you, oh boy, something's coming in right now. Okay. If you realize that you came here for a reason and you have it, and it's much more valuable for you to stay, you know, and oh my gosh, oh, this is big. I don't know if this is someone or something, but anyway, it's like, and if you knew that what the ramifications were, I think that's why this is so powerful. And that's why it had to be said, that the ramifications are so, so big for leaving. You need to know this. People need to know this because they're leaving. It's like, no, you can't do this. You need to stay. You came here for a reason. Finish it. Finish the job. You know?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Some listeners will probably know that I do a number of different consultations with people, and that I've met a number of individuals who have finished their role here, and they're thinking, well, what next? And I say, well, you've got a choice. You can either stay or go, but you're here for a reason, and you've gone by now if you were supposed to go. So we need to find out what the reason is you're staying here.
Yeah.
And so, you know,
what was it was in Jonathan Livingston Seagull, the one who wrote that. It was in one of those books, and it said, because people this is back in the 70s, and people were always like, you know, am I supposed to be here or not? And it said in there, if you're still here, or they said, am I done yet? And it said, if you're still here, you're not done. It's that simple.
That's right. Yeah.
Still got stuff to do.
It's like the old Nemo film, isn't it? Keep on swimming.
Absolutely.
You're still here. Okay. Keep on swimming.
Mm-hmm. Now, something else that was really I thought was really good. You have the hierarchies of the guides and the helpers and everybody. I mean, she just laid it all out. So did you find that interesting?
Well, I was surprised. I mean, one of the things that I feel the need to sort of say now is that most of these things are described to us in human terms so we can understand it. Mm-hmm. And so calling, you know, helpers and guides, and there's master guides, and there's other sort of entities that fly around, and the different things to work with us. Although we're using sort of human descriptions for them in terms of their names, the functions of what they do is still the same. So irrespective of whether they've got a description saying I'm a master guide, the effect of what they do is that they are working on multiple different levels concurrently, whereas another entity that's just a guide works on a singular level, so to speak, and then the helpers help the guides. So that was something else that came out of the woodwork. I wasn't expecting that at all. Mm-hmm. And certainly the depth of which these different levels of assistance, so to speak, for what we have whilst we're incarnate was absolutely surprising to me. I mean, if you think about it, there's a huge network of entities out there supporting just us.
Yeah? Exactly.
Well, that's
what I'm saying. We're never alone.
Yeah. I mean, and they're not only just supporting us on this level, i.e. this particular event space, but all of the different event space or realities, if you want to call them that we create through our various different choice profiles. And so they're working on that as well. So all the different versions of us that we create through going this way rather than that way, or forwards rather than backwards, or, you know, taking the bus rather than taking the train, or taking the plane rather than taking the motor car, are being worked on concurrently by all these different entities. And so there's a huge network. You know, the number of incarnate entities is minuscule in comparison to the the sort of back room entities that are there helping us, making sure that we're in the right place at the right time, experiencing the right experiences, interfacing with the right environments and the right other incarnate entities to be able to help our own evolutionary progression, our own sort of experience, learning and evolution, and theirs as well. And that the expectation downstream is also met as well. So it's it's like a huge film set. As an example, that's a good example, actually. If you think of one actor in a big film, and there's all the people doing the choreography, doing the makeup, doing the sets, doing the editing, doing the animation, doing all the CGI, you know, all those things, that's about what we've got each. Although we do have some specific individuals who are really close to us as well.
But when you first started saying it, I got this visual. It was starting of a visual, and then I heard you haven't a clue really going on. Talking to me, not you, but talking to me. Well, it was just like, I think we're getting a glimpse, and you have a bigger glimpse than I will ever have. But it's like, I think we get what we can grasp, and it's still probably so far removed of what's really actually it is.
We all have different levels of cluelessness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And if we, you know, anybody who thinks they've got it certainly hasn't got it. We get an idea, we get a direction to go into, and we're allowed to go in that direction, even in error, as long as it's the right direction. As long as we're not going backwards, we're doing okay.
That was the whole thing. I mean, like you said, it's all these different decisions, all these different moves we make. Because all of those are, because every time we do something, then that's a whole different us, right? That's a whole different timeline, time person, something like have another name for it.
Event spaces, yeah.
And then, like you said, then okay, another helper goes off then to be with. Or our helpers, and then my goodness, see, your brain can go. This is why you have to have. We have to have Guy to translate this for us and to get the information for us, because it takes this kind of a brain to get it. This information. Yeah. So.
And I'm looking forward to when somebody supersedes me. Because there are times when my brain is so full of stuff, it's about to explode.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. I can understand. I can totally understand that statement. Oh, my goodness.
One of the other things that came out of the book that I was really quite interested in was the hierarchy of ourselves as well, you know, from the true energetic self, or the oversoul, or Godhead, or higher self, whichever you want to call that bigger part of us that stays, disincarnate, and that it projects a number of entities down, or can project a number of entities down, up to about 12, and then those 12 can project smaller entities, and so you get a hierarchy of entities that are various different levels of sentience, as depending upon how this sentience is shared out from the true energetic self down to the aspect, which we call the soul, and then the shard, which you would call a subsoul. And so understanding that was interesting as well. But the other thing that came out was secondary incarnations as well, which was something completely different, where if an entity went into an incarnate state that's of a higher frequency than we are now, then it can elect to, because it's got the functionality still, because it stayed in a higher frequency, to leave a certain amount, a minimal amount of energy in sentience associated with its soul or aspects within that body, and then project it into a lower frequency vehicle, like a human body, and experience two lifetimes at the same time. It's, you know, from a static condition. And of course, on top of that, we have the different parallel versions of those springing up as well. So secondary incarnations was something else that made me scratch my head. So
we know if you're scratching your head, we're over here going, we're Well, Guy, before we, because we're almost out of time, if people want to find you, what's the best way for them to find you or to be able to contact you to ask these questions that I know that they're scratching their heads asking?
Yeah. Well, each of the books has got an email address that you could use. I mean, the earlier books have got the history of God at btinternet.com, and the history of God is all one word. The later books, which I think starts from the Andalogs, has got info@beyondthesource.org. So I'll say it again, info, which is I-N-F-O, at Beyond the Source, as in Beyond the Source Books, .org. And any of those emails come through to the info at beyondthesource.org email address. But also, if they get to the website, which is www.beyondthesource.org, or these days it's just beyondthesource.org, because I don't think people need to bother with the www preface anymore. But they can go on the website there, and there's all sorts of information on there to, you know, what the different books are, what I'm up to, different blogs I've done, workshops I'm doing, lectures that I've done. You can download some of the lectures. You can look at the World Satsangas and download the audios from those. And there's correspondence courses as well for creating psychic shields. The Traversing the Frequencies level ones and level twos are on there as well. And so there's lots of stuff there, including the ability to have readings and healings with me as well as one-to-one consultation as well.
You're very active. Well, we've got about a minute left. What would you like to share as a final message? Did Anne have a final message or anything in the book, or would you like to share anything as a final parting message?
Well, it's interesting because as I was thinking about it, I was thinking about a lecture which I prepared, which I'm going to deliver at the Transformation Conference, which I'll call the TC, next year. And it's something which is really, really, really quite powerful in terms of a piece of knowledge. And it's understanding what our ego is and how it affects us and why it's created. And really what we ought to know is that it's the ego which keeps us earthbound. It's the ego which keeps us in the karmic loop. It's the ego that wants us to stay in our low frequency, unaware state so that it can perpetuate its own existence. And so if you can defeat your ego, then you can start to become more spiritually self-aware and enlightened. So if you get a chance to read that section of what the ego is, in fact, even now, if you go on the website, there's the PowerPoint slides for it. Have a read of that because it's quite nice. And if anybody wants to get in contact with me, so I can give them a PDF of the article I wrote on what the ego is and how it affects us, I'll be quite happy to email it to them because it's in the open domain. But when I talk about it at the TC, obviously there'll be more animation, so to speak, talking about it and more. Interaction with the audience as well, but the thing is, it's the ego which keeps us here, and the ego is a temporary personality that's created through our incarnate state. That's it. But keep the ego down, and you'll progress.
And there's a way that you, I was actually a little off on the time, and so there's a way that you can get the ego to cooperate with everything, correct?
I believe there is.
You said keep the ego down. So, I mean, is that
Basically, we have to keep ourselves in a state of neutrality, in a state of calmness, in a state of understanding, in a state using the observer self, as Susan Tesenga introduced back in the 80s, I think, with her book, Healing the Wounded, Healing and the Undefended Self books. They were quite good, they were, in terms of sorting oneself out before one became a healer. So using the observer self and just recording how we respond with other people and in different environments, and what pushes our buttons and what doesn't push our button and who pushes our buttons. And if we can work on these things and stop people and things pushing our buttons, so we can start to observe things in the passive observer view, like it's somebody else's film, for instance, then we start to control the ego, because the ego then doesn't get involved with stuff like it would do. And when we start to lose the ego, our frequencies rise up and we start to get more intuitive functionality and more ability to connect with the greater reality, including, of course, our creator. So if we can, we never lose the ego, because if we lost the ego, we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't need to be here, but we can keep it under some level of control by understanding what it is and acting in a way which is appropriate to its, to making sure its influence is reduced significantly. It's probably a better way of saying it, yes.
Yeah, that's actually, that makes sense. I was just thinking, like, I found that, you know, there's a way to get it to cooperate, but you're right. It's when it's calm that it cooperates, but you're right. That's how it gets calm, is by knowing those things. So that's interesting. I just never analyzed it that way, but that is your role. That is your job. You always have to, you analyze. So that makes sense that you would get to that point. So very interesting. I just know that the ego can learn or can realize that it can cooperate, then, I mean, like, this is what we learned in QHHT, that if it will take a cooperative role, then you're no longer battling it. You're not trying to do it. It just sits there, and you gain, it just takes on a whole different place. Because it's calm, it allows you to gain access, you know, to so much, you know, it's like, okay, fine. I don't have a problem with that. And then you're able to do what you need to do.
It's a little bit like being in a cage with a tiger.
Yeah, exactly. But if you're sitting there going, now you go over there and be good, and you go over there, you know, we're going to do this. And it's going, I don't think so.
It's a safe shoot. Now, to stop you eating me, I'm going to give you some meat.
Yeah. So, and thank you for bringing up the conference. Yes, you will. That will be in June of next year. And we're really excited about that. And always glad to have you. I think this year was like the only year, or one of the few years, you have not been at the conference. So this is really exciting. You'll be back again. And
I never expect to be there, because there's always other good authors coming along who've got something to say as well. So it's always a delight to be invited. But what I will say to the listeners out there, if you do get a chance to go there, Eureka Springs is a fantastic place. The energy there is awesome. That's an English awesome, by the way. And it's really good. I mean, I've been to the hotel that Ozark Mountain Publishing use, and Julia and Nancy are there, and it's a lovely, lovely hotel. The environment is fantastic. It's like a Glastonbury away from Glastonbury, but it's better than Glastonbury. So sorry guys, if you like Glastonbury, but this is better.
I think they're sister. You know, that's how I felt when I was in Glastonbury. It felt like Eureka Springs. So it's like it was just the sister place. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, I think the energy is better in Eureka Springs. For a whole bunch of different reasons I won't go into, but every time I go there, I think, yeah, there's lots of stuff happening here. The energies are rising there still, and it's just wonderful. It's just wonderful. So yeah, if you get a chance to go there for the TC next year, I believe there's some super early bird prices for the whole conference. So now's a good time to book. And, you'll see a lot of great speakers, including myself, who will be one of the days, I'm no doubt, speaking about the ego and probably other things if we get a chance. And I'm hoping there's some workshops as well, along with some consultations, readings, and healings.
Absolutely. So, well, now we actually are out of time. And so But thank you very much, Guy. That was wonderful. You said it better than I could have said anything about the conference. So that was fantastic. And thank you so much for being with us tonight. And this is fantastic. It was such an honor to have you on.
Again. Well, it's an honor to be invited, actually. So we have a dual honorship.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again. And thank you, everyone, for being with us. And we'll see you again next time whenever the servers decide to be working again and with whatever's going on. And till then, we love you, and we'll be here, and we'll see you. So love you all, and good night.
Yeah, much love to you all. Good night.